Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. I'm here, as always, with Jason Pat. Jason, what's going on?
Not a whole lot. Just watching some more Zach LaVine workout videos and also watching Lauri Markkanen getting all jacked. Getting me jacked and juiced for this Bulls season.
There's nothing like the off-season picture of a guy in the best shape of his life. That's how we truly know the season is almost here. And what better way to start bringing in that than to welcome in our guest tonight, Matt Moore from the Action Network. Matt, how you doing?
Doing well. How are y'all?
We're doing great. Thanks. So Matt, you a couple weeks ago you wrote a column about the Bulls and the Suns. Two teams that were absolutely atrocious last season. We obviously lived through the miserable Bulls season of 22 wins. And obviously the Action Network does stuff with betting, over-unders, I've been following that as well over at Bet Chicago. And you wrote a column about the Bulls and Suns, thinking that a little more optimistic than last season. I know that the Bulls odds have been kind of trending upwards. You were also tweeting some stuff today. And I've noticed that the Bulls have kind of been going up from around 29-30. Now they're at around 32, 33. But in this column, you kind of talked about how the Bulls they have more good players now, and you think they're going to go over. At least it was the 29.5 number. I know it's gone up since then. I don't know if you'd go over then. I'll let you kind of take that away from there. But what makes you a bit more comfortable about betting that Bulls getting at least over 30 wins and maybe into the low to mid 30s?
I think a lot of it is I'm sold on one. There's a brief period after the All-Star break when Porter was healthy. And they looked like a competent team. Like, Otto was doing all the things that he was doing early in his Wizards tenure and then kind of stopped doing as the team tailspun the last couple of years. I love the Satoransky pickup. I think that was really great. I think, Thaddeus Young is a guy that does all the things that makes you better, like all the things that you need, like, smart players to do, he can handle. I'm very high on Markkanen. I'm exceptionally high on Markkanen. I think Coby White's going to be at least – pretty good, or at least exciting enough. And really when he gets down to it is they have enough guys that I feel confident are going to be in the league in 18 months to say, like, this is a roster of NBA caliber dudes. And that's like, they found some really good values on the open market too. Like, Luke Kornet, I thought that was a really good pickup. Thad Young, like I mentioned, like, they actually managed their money, I thought, really well in the off season. LaVine's going to give you production. I don't think he's going to give you impact. Like, the Bulls and the Suns are kind of similar in that regard, where it's like, I know Booker's going to get you points, but I don't know if he's actually going to help you win. It's kind of the same deal with Zach LaVine. But I do think that, like, Markkanen, I think, is a guy that helps you. I think that, like, Markkanen and Young, I really like that combo. I think Porter really can be a guy that helps you win games. And the bars is still low enough. You can get it as low as 30.5. That's a DraftKings. That number I feel really good about. When you get to 33.5, I start to get a little bit more like, I don't know about that. I liked it a lot better at 29.5, but even at 30.5, I think that this team is going to be in the low to mid 30s in the Eastern Conference. I think most of their outcomes, if you play out the season 1,000 times, I think most of their outcomes are going to land in that range. And I feel like this isn't a good team. I'm not sure what their long-term future is. I don't know, like, what the identity of it, like, who's their core going forward. But I feel like they have enough pieces for me to buy into what the structure is going forward.
Yeah, and clearly a lot of people were hammering the over on that initial total, because you went through some lines today at various sports books, Matt, and the line was raised pretty much across the board. I guess Points Bet had it at 32.5. Caesars had it at 33, Westgate had it at 33. I would even take the over on that. I know that you've said that, around that line is where you would get some hesitation. What do you think sort of the downside is for the Bulls if you were to get to an over-under number around 35? Sort of what is it about this team that would, give you some hesitation that maybe they would struggle to get to 35 wins this year if the over-under were to get that high?
I think for starters, they're bad. Like, I think that's, like, the opening. Like, they're just bad. And when you look at the roster, I don't know exactly who they're going to be. Like, I just don't know. I don't know, like, what their roster is really primed to be. Like, are they they're not a defensive team. That's obvious. Although maybe, like, Porter, if he's really good, if, like, he's, like, top level, but he hasn't been that way in a couple of seasons. Are they an offensive team? Are they like a five out with Markkanen? Like, I don't really know what their identity is. They're young, they're inexperienced, they're like the offseason additions were good players, but not like huge impact guys. And so, like, I don't know who's going to carry them. It's not going to be LaVine. As much as I like Zach LaVine, it's not going to be LaVine. So the question is, like, you're on the road, you're facing the Pistons. All right, you're down seven at half. Who steps up in the second half and takes it home for you? Like, who's going to deliver in that second half? And you're like, maybe LaVine, maybe Margaret. Like, the uncertainty is really where teams in the regular season fall apart. And I feel like the Bulls have a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah, and you mentioned the identity thing. I feel like some of that might come down to how Jim Boylan puts his imprint on this roster. And I feel like that's another one of the big questions. I know we have been very critical about Jim Boylan, and I feel like the Bulls basically became a laughing stock last season. Not only because they were bad, but because Jim Boylan was kind of a laughing stock with all his goofy quotes, the mutiny, and all that stuff. What do you make of Jim Boylan? Like, do you think he's the right coach to take this team, to take this rebuild forward? Is he like an A to B guy where then maybe they get a little better and then they bring in a better coach down the road to take them to that next level? It's what do you make of Jim Boylan?
So I'm gonna go ahead and admit something right now. I am so uncertain of the idea of Boylan being still the head coach that I literally was uncertain of whether to answer in my like. I had this moment where I was like, "Is he still coach? They don't really like. They didn't fire him, really? Like they? I'm dead serious. Like I didn't mention him in my answer because I was like, wait, I don't want to say Boylan if it's like." They fired him 4 months ago, Matt. Clearly, they just had a new coach because so much has changed in the NBA over the summer that I'm constantly having to be like, okay, who plays where? And like, all right, is he still the coach? Okay, he's still the coach. Like, there's all these places. Like, I said Jaeger the other day. Like, I mentioned Jaeger the other day on a Kings podcast because I was like, oh yeah, they fired Jaeger and brought in Luke Walton. That's a thing that happened. So like Boylan, yeah, like Boylan, I think is a case of there are all these signs. Not all these signs. There was like a brief window, like I talked about after the All-Star break, where you're like, ooh, I can kind of buy into this. Like things are looking kind of good here despite all that. But when you look at the quotes and the narratives and the whole, like, you never like watch the Bulls and we're like, this is a really well-coached team. You watch them and just were like, they are trying. And that's like where it gets difficult because I'm like, man, if you do get your guys to try, that's a lot of it in the regular season. I just don't know if that's sustainable over time, given how much, they hated him at points. So I feel like there's a possibility that it could be okay for a while. It's kind of like Skiles, right? Where you're like, this could work for a while, but eventually this is going to turn bad. And when it does, it's going to turn real bad.
Yeah, to me, keeping Boylan was like the one move in line with the rest of Garpax's history that the Bulls have made in 2019. Everything else has been pretty good. I mean, the Otto Porter trade, I think, is the best move they've made in a long time, at least outside of the draft. We haven't seen John Paxson and Gar Foreman actually improve the team via a trade since they traded for John Sammons and Brad Miller back in 2009. So that move was totally out of character, and it was awesome. You look at their free agency change between the last 2 years. A year ago, you're giving Jabari Parker $20 million, totally bidding against yourselves on a contract no one was going to give him. They expected him to be the starting small forward when he initially signed that deal. I think that logic was just totally flawed from the beginning. This was first guessing, not second guessing. Now look at what they did this year. I think they gave out $30 million combined to Satoransky, Thad Young, and Luke Kornet. To me, three guys who all offer you the potential to outperform their contract. Obviously, Jason and I have been really critical of the Bulls, but I do think in a lot of ways they are starting to turn a corner in decision making. To me, though, Boylan is the one guy that, could sort of make or break this positive momentum because he really did not do anything last year to sort of put confidence in the fan base that he can actually be a quality head coach.
I think the other thing there is, what's the structure going to look like in terms of Boylan doesn't strike you as a guy that's going to input a system that's going to be ironclad, that's going to make sense. Because like now, with how they built the roster, they have the real capacity to play really perimeter oriented. Right? Like Markkanen was 76th percentile last season in spot ups. Arturo Cano, who I love, was even higher, I think, than that. I think he was what was he at? He was not, yeah, 96th percentile. I love Archie, just phenomenal. If they put the ball in Satoransky's hands and are like, hey, let's like, we're gonna run pick and roll. especially if, let's say, the Wendell Carter Jr. gets to step on an NBA floor at some point. We're going to run pick and roll. We're going to stretch five with Markkanen, and we're going to have Porter on the wing along with Archie on the wing to be able to deliver. And you're going to be able to, like, actually have, like, a – like, that offense makes sense, right? But then, like, my question then is, like, well, where does Zach LaVine fit in? Because I don't have a lot of confidence in LaVine running a dynamic offense. I don't mind him as, like, a tip-of-the-spear secondary scorer, but you got to have somebody to run the team. And I don't know if Satoransky has done enough in his career to get that kind of trust. And I don't know if Boylan has enough control of the team to be able to insert that, or if that's the choice that he'll make instead of doing something insane, like we're going to play through the post or something.
Right, which is what he did last year. I was wondering if you could provide some perspective on sort of Satoransky versus Chris Dunn, because to me, I really love the Satoransky signing for multiple reasons, but one of them is because I think he'll work better within the structure of the Bulls starting unit. When Chris Dunn was on the floor, Chris Dunn was always sort of been programmed as an alpha dog. He never saw himself as the fifth option. And ultimately, that was going to be the case when you're sharing the floor with Zach LaVine, with Lauri Markkanen, with Otto. You want all those guys getting more shots than Chris Dunn when they're all on the floor together. You look at Satoransky, he's always a guy who hasn't posted a huge usage rate. Last year, only 14%. That was the highest of his career. I kind of like the idea of Satoransky being a really measured point guard who can sort of pick his spots. And, you know, if anything, I feel like the knock on Satoransky throughout his career is that he hasn't been aggressive enough, especially offensively. Maybe he's lacked some assertiveness. But I think, you know, within the structure of the Bulls starting lineup, that having a more measured approach at point guard, someone who can hit a catch and shoot jumper, someone who won't, you know, force the issue and make a mistake, could really be valuable for the Bulls.
I love Sato. I love watching him play. He's one of my favorites on League Pass. One of the things that I noticed the last couple of years, the last two to three seasons with the Wizards, was that Markieff Morris, who I think very poorly of as an NBA player, was exceptional when he wasn't on the floor with John Wall. And I was like, that's really weird. Because he would have negative ratings with the starting unit and then have really good units with the bench. And I was like, why is that? And so I went back and watched. And then when you watch the clips, you notice that Satoransky just had a real natural fit with a forward who could stretch the floor. Like, he understood how to find him on cuts, when to find him on spot ups and things like that. So when I look at what the Bulls bring to the table with Markkanen, even with Porter to a degree, with them having had chemistry before, like, I'm pretty optimistic about that, because Porter's numbers kind of reflected the same thing. You would see these bumps with Satoransky, not because Satoransky's a better player than John Wall was when John Wall was, you know, alive, but he was better in terms of the kind of things where taking a secondary position as just like, I'm just going to facilitate and play make. So, like, he can really, I think, make the most of what they have on roster, again, outside of LaVine. Like, to me, he's exceptional. He's a good spot-up shooter. You know, Synergy's got a lot of problems with its data. Like, there's a lot of things you can find that are questionable in there, but it's a good kind of, like, all right, if it's in certain percentiles, he's probably pretty good at this. It's not, you know, parsing between 98th and 80th, say, might get a little fishy, but, like, here's a good number for you. Like, Satoransky, when you factor in all of his scoring position and his assists, he was 98th percentile last season and 98th percentile in the half court. Like, that's the Wizards' offense. Now, a lot of that's he's passing to Bradley Beal, right? So you focus on that and you say, well, sure, Bradley Beal was fantastic. But look at the rest of that Wizards team and how much of a pile of garbage it was. And then realize that Satoransky still had that offense absolutely humming when he was on the floor. So, like, that's got to be the ideal, that LaVine is some sort of, like, Kmart version of Beal, and then Satoransky fits in around, and you've actually got, I think, better pieces in Chicago now than what the Wizards had supporting last season outside of Beal, and now you're like, okay, that, like, this is what the formula is going to look like offensively. There is a chance that the Bulls are going to be really good offensively. They should have been much better the last two seasons. I think with the personnel that they've changed, where they've added smarter players, that can happen. But it is going to take, I think, a lot of things, especially on the coaching side, and that's where things get dicey.
Yeah, it really makes me wonder, are the Bulls smart now, or are they only smarter than the Wizards? Because they made a great trade to deal two empty calorie guys in Bobby Portis and Jabari Parker for Otto, I loved that move. And I still have trouble believing that they actually nabbed Satoransky on what's essentially a two-year, $20 million contract. They've got a little bit of guaranteed money on the third year, but pretty impressive.
I think, Jason, look, there's a lot to be said for just if you're able to go look at an offseason and be like, they didn't do anything stupid. Like, that's pretty good. Like, they didn't, like, that was the thing with the Lakers this offseason, really. Like, they got Anthony Davis, so that's a win no matter what. But with all the remaining money, even though they didn't get Kawhi, like, the Lakers didn't do anything stupid. Like, it was one thing, like, bringing back Rondo and JaVale is fine because of all the other guys that you brought in. It was when you brought in the previous season Rondo and JaVale and Beasley and all these other guys. Like, that's where it really got troublesome. Versus, like, you know, with the Suns, who, is another team that I'm pretty high on for their over because it's so low. You know, the Suns, I thought, had a really good offseason in terms of the players that they brought into roster. They also made an absolutely just completely bafflingly stupid trade with Memphis. Like, they still had a really dumb move. Chicago managed to get through the entire summer having done nothing dumb. The question is going to be, okay, if they struggle out of the gate, if this team is not as good as they think it is, are Garpacks going to wind up, are they going to make some sort of move in December or January because they're like, uh-oh, we're circling the drain again, and shake it up again versus like, no, just like let them get used to each other. See, and then at the end of the year, you're going to know a lot more about what you actually need. You'll be able to make really good, hard decisions at the end of the season if you just don't do anything in impetuous.
For sure. And with the smart offseason, I've noticed that, like, compared to, like, the Vegas odds, which are all in, like, the low 30s, a bunch of these, like, statistical projections have the Bulls in, like, the high 30s and basically fighting for the 8 seed. Right. I know ESPN, like, Kevin Pelton at ESPN had them, I think, at over 39 wins. Jacob Goldstein had them, I think, at 39 wins. 538 had them, at 38 wins. Obviously, you're not that optimistic about them. I think we're a little closer. Maybe we're just being homerish there. I guess, what do you think is, like, the disconnect between some of those stat projections and then where, like, Vegas has them with those in the low 30s?
I think that there's just been so much change, and I think a lot of the projections are – I think a lot of the projections are unstable. Like, I was asked today about why – stuff like Kevin Pelton, who's a genius that I would never question, why his model and like 538s have the Jazz lower than what the over-under is. The over-under for the Jazz this season is 54.5, right? And like that's a really high number, and I'm still probably taking the over. It's getting real tight at 54.5. Like I can find it lower at 52.5 and feel better there. I think the offensive talent for the Bulls leads you to believe, because think of it, right? Those statistical models are usually going to incorporate most of the times that they're modeling are going to focus on impact rather than production. So they're not looking like those things aren't looking for what we may have looked for in 2007, 2008 in terms of per 36 stats or efficiency. Like they're focused more on like a lot of that's like plus minus offensive box score stuff. Well, like Satoransky's a guy that makes your team better. Porter's a guy that makes your team better. Thad Young is a guy that makes your team better. Those are the three biggest additions over last year's team at the start of last season, right? If you look at year over year from where they were on the opening night of last year to now, like it's just a really big upgrade in terms of guys that help you win games going from Jabari Parker, God help him, to Thad Young. Like, that's just a massive upgrade in terms of dude, which is crazy because, like, Thad Young's not nearly as talented as Jabari Parker could have been or should have been or maybe is. But Thad Young's a guy that's been in the league forever and knows how to help you at multiple spots, and the league is adapted to who he is. Like, I did an interview with Thad Young in 2008 where he was having to play power forward some. And this is, like, back when, like, tweeners were a bad thing. Like, Thad Young was described as a tweener. And I asked him in one of like my first career interviews was talking to Thad Young on the phone. And I was like, what do you think about playing the four? He's like, I hate it. I never want to play the four. I just want to play the three. And now he plays the four because the league has made the four into what he was playing as three then. So like, I think all those things kind of factor in. Like, look, you know, the models aren't going to account for they're probably starting a rookie point guard or playing not starting. They're probably playing a rookie point guard heavy minutes, and that's concerning. It's not factoring in the youth and the inexperience, nor is it probably going to factor in the fact that they play in a pretty tough division, comparatively speaking, in the Eastern Conference, right? Like Detroit, Milwaukee, Indiana, those are three like fine to really good teams. So like all these things tend to get missed. What's interesting, I think, about the over-under number, by the way, is I did want to note this. So like I talked to Jeff Sherman last year, who's one of the bookmakers over at the Westgate in Las Vegas, and the Bulls were the number one team that they had liability on for the over. That's one of the reasons that the over this year is higher, is they had so much liability last year that they knew they were going to get hit with over bets again, so they had to go ahead. Now, like, that was great for me last year because I pounded the under because I was like, this team sucks. but now, you know, now it's a lot tougher, I think, and that's why, like, you know, it's good to shop around in some of the books because I really don't like them at 33.5. That starts to get a little bit dicey, but I love them. I like them a lot closer to 30.5.
That is super interesting. We'll see. Like I said, both me and Ricky are thinking a little higher and going over those numbers, but I also thought that last year too, and that was my Bulls fandom taking over, and then they, of course, made us look like complete jackasses. So that was great. You mentioned the Lakers a bit before. We're going to talk about some league-wide stuff, talk about the Lakers a bit more, talk about Dwight Howard. Before that, we are going to take a quick word from our sponsor at MyBookie. It's a brand new football season, and then the NBA season's right around the corner as well. There's been a ton of change in the NFL. Antonio Brown's on the Raiders, Le'Veon Bell on the Jets, Odell Beckham in Cleveland, and of course the NBA had a crazy offseason. Kawhi going to the Clippers, Anthony Davis going to the Lakers, all that fun stuff. One thing that hasn't changed is where I'm putting my money down in all the games. MyBookie is the place to bet on football every weekend. Our Blue Wire podcasters are using MyBookie.com/BlueWire to sign up this year. MyBookie has better bonuses and more prop bets than any other sportsbook, period. This year, they're hosting the first online handicapping super contest. First place is guaranteed to win at least $100,000, and it only costs $100 to enter. All you gotta do is pick 5 NFL games against the spread every week to climb the leaderboard and score your share of the huge cash prize pool. MyBookie has live, in-game betting on every NFL game. They've got the most rewarding player perks in the business, and for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. So visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie, and don't forget to use the promo code BLUEWIRE when creating your account to claim this bonus. So bet, win, and get paid. All right, Cash Considerations is back. We have our special guest, Matt Moore from the Action Network on. Matt, let's talk about the Lakers. You did mention them. They didn't really do anything stupid this offseason. They obviously got Anthony Davis. They made some other pretty nice moves. You can argue about Rajon Rondo. They just signed Dwight Howard. What do you make of the Dwight Howard signing? And I was a guy pushing for Joakim Noah to go there, even with all the LeBron, all that history there. It would have maybe broken my heart a little bit, but I felt like Noah, the way he played last year in Memphis, he looked pretty good. Might have been better just as an energy guy, maybe better for the locker room. I know he had some issues in New York, in the big city, that whole life, and maybe being out in L.A. would have scared them off. But I guess just in general, what do you think Dwight Howard's going to work out? Do you think he'll make the team? I know he's a non-guaranteed deal. Do you think they should have taken Noah or anybody else over him?
Well, first off, because I work at Action Network, I'm obligated to mention this stat, which I think is incredible. The team that Dwight Howard has been on has hit the under on their win total in 8 of the last 9 seasons. The one exception was the 2016 Rockets, where he missed 41 games. Other than that, every single time in the last 9 seasons, the team Dwight Howard has been on has hit the under. I think that they should have signed Noah. Noah was really good in Memphis. Noah is a high character guy. He's proved last year he can actually play a little bit. He's got the kind of dogged intensity that you're looking for, that you still are going to kind of need, especially, honestly, you need a guy to stay up on Anthony Davis. Like, you need a guy to stay up on AD. This is something that's not really talked about enough because he's a star player, and so we just kind of give him a pass and we assign all sorts of attributes to him. He's a killer and a ruthless competitor and a brilliant mastermind. It's like, no, like, he's just like a really good kid that likes to play basketball. And is exceptionally good at it because he's a guard in a 7-footer's body. I think Noah would have really helped them. I think that, you know, look, if you remove the name Dwight Howard and you just say injury-plagued big man that's 6'11", can rebound and play defense, then they're like, yeah, like, you need that with Cousins out. Like, you're just going to need another rim protector because AD hates playing center. So if JaVale gets hurt, you know, either AD's doing it or Kyle Kuzma is, but somebody's got to play five. So, you know, they could have probably waited to see if they needed to do that. They could have probably seen, like, I think Noah would have been a better option just to see. I think they were probably spooked off by the Tyson Chandler experience last year with him just not being able to play. And that's a concern with Noah, is just like, he, if he picks up an injury, anything, like, one injury will spiral into three injuries, and then he just can't go with where he's at in his career. Thanks, Tibbs. So I think it's probably, it's fine. It's just not ideal. It's not like what you, it's not some sort of crazy smart move that you're like, ooh, this is like, there's real risk in it, in that for whatever reason, he's been really disliked in locker rooms. And I think that with as much pressure as the Lakers are going to be under, I think that it might be accelerated a little bit. But then again, LeBron's such a dominant personality that there may not be room for him to really cause issues, because like, LeBron's going to keep things under lockdown in terms of, if there's going to be locker room problems, it's going to be with LeBron making people miserable, not Dwight Howard.
Speaking of centers, I'm breaking the agenda here. Sorry, Jason. I want to talk about someone we haven't mentioned on this podcast yet. That's Wendell Carter Jr. I think that Carter Jr. could be primed for a really good year. In my opinion, he's the Bulls' best prospect, because I think that he's the most well-rounded of their prospects. He's someone who, you know, defensively, I think, could be an anchor for the team. Offensively, I think he might be one of the, you know, two or three best passers on the team. The Bulls last year didn't really let him do that a lot. Boylan was mostly pounding the ball to him in the post, but I was in the UC on Halloween when the Bulls went against the Nuggets and Jokic, and Carter put up 25, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 blocks, 3 steals. It was just a virtuoso performance for a 19-year-old at the time. So I'm just curious, Matt, if you have any impressions of Wendell Carter Jr., if you think that, you know, it's fair to consider him the best prospect on a team that also has Lauri Markkanen, and sort of where you think the expectation should be set for, you know, a 20-year-old in year two.
I don't think it's unfair, because he hasn't shown enough to disprove it, but that's also the problem, is like, he hasn't shown enough, is that I think it's fine to say he's the best prospect, because, you know, if he's healthy and he lives up to his potential, he was so hyped by draft Twitter last year. Just draft Twitter just loved WCJ, just adored him. And I was like, okay, well, let's see what he can do. And then he was like, okay, at spots, and had some games, and then he got hurt, and that was pretty much it. And so now I'm just like, well, I gotta see him. Like, I gotta see more before I can really make an assertion of him. I think having him as a pick and roll threat at the rim is really good. I think you're right that he's a good passer, so being able to hit him off of the short roll could be really beneficial. You know, I think he's gonna be a pretty good screener, which I think is gonna be helpful. And defensively, like, if the Bulls wind up shocking everybody and winning closer to like the high 30s, low 40s, it's going to be because Porter, Wendell Carter Jr., and Thad Young form like a three-man trifecta in the front court that all of a sudden you're like, oh, this team's pretty good defensively. And like, actually, I think Markkanen's a little underrated in that aspect as well. Like, I lean towards Markkanen as the best prospect that they have, but I don't think it's wrong to say Wendell Carter Jr. I just think that I want to see more of him. I want to see him stay on the floor. I need to see what he looks like. And with a full year of NBA conditioning, he could have an absolutely monster year, but I got to see whether he can stay on the court first.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. And I think one of the issues last year too, like the coaching change, I think really hurt it. Like, boy, the post-ups were just, I feel like, a problem. I feel like just the whole skill set that he has just like was not on display. I hope that they kind of let him loose a bit this year, and we'll see. You talk about if the Bulls maybe are a surprise team, even if they're not, just in the Eastern Conference, just kind of looking at the general Eastern Conference, maybe playoff picture. I guess, how do you see just the East shaking out? Like, I mean, the Bucks are going to be there again. And then I know you've had some harsh words about the Celtics, and just about, you were talking about their win totals, I know, earlier today. I mean, the Sixers made some big moves. I mean, the Pacers will be weird with Oladipo out. The Raptors don't have Kawhi. I mean, after those teams, I mean, you got kind of that, like, morass. You have, like, the Magic, the Pistons, all right, the Heat have Jimmy now. Like, I mean, the Bulls, maybe if they can sneak up into that and they get lucky and get eight seats. I guess just how do you see the whole Eastern Conference really kind of shaking out right now?
You need one good month to make the playoffs in the East. That's it. You just, if you play well for a month, if you have a really solid January because everybody's hurt and resting players, like, That's all you really need, and then you're in. That's all you got to do in the Eastern Conference is have one really good month. It's a two-team conference. There's the Bucks, there's the Sixers, and then everything else really does not matter. Nothing else matters. The Raptors are not going to matter. I don't like their chances. I'm going to take the under on them. I think championship hangover, aging Lowry, Gasol, and Ibaka, probably a little bit of regression for Siakam. I don't see much growth from anybody else. I don't think that Fred VanVleet Senior is going to turn into Michael Jordan for the rest of his career. So I think that they probably fall off a little bit. The Celtics, like you mentioned, I think that they're going to be not bad, but they're not going to be great. I think they're going to be like they'll win, rack up 45 plus wins because it's the East, and that's about it. I think Detroit's probably going to be good because there's a lot of metrics that indicate that they're just going to, like, even though you're never impressed with them and you're not really scared of them, they're going to win 40 plus games, and that's going to get you in the playoffs. The Magic, I think, are a coin flip. If the Magic have a bad month, like, that could sink them and open up the door for somebody like the Bulls to kind of sneak in. There's a lot of hype around the Hawks. I went on Locked On Hawks podcast the other day and was talking about how I think they're probably going to be an under based off of the fact that they're a young team. Like, the rest of their roster is just so young. Like, they just don't know what they're doing. And that's a really big problem. Like, you have to know what you're doing. The Cavs, same kind of deal. They're going to be really bad. So, like, the Bulls are kind of in this middle range of teams where if somebody slips, they can take advantage. Like, if Jimmy Butler doesn't make the Heat better, the Pistons are only okay, and the Magic have a bad month, there's going to be a window for the Bulls to kind of slip up and sneak into that top kind of range. I'm higher on the Pacers than most people are, but I do think that the Bulls are going to be, I think they'll be out of the playoff picture because I think that they're going to be too young and too bad defensively. But I think that there'll probably be a window in like January where we're like, Bulls might make the playoffs. Like, that's a thing that could happen, and then they'll hit a losing streak, and that'll be it. But that's okay because it'd be better to have like consistent gradual growth than them overplaying it and then making the playoffs and getting just ran out the building by the Sixers, and realizing how far away you are. I think it's better to like take one step forward, reevaluate after this year, and you'll have a much better idea of where you need to go.
I honestly feel like the Bulls are going to make the playoffs, and most people are shocked when I say that because I feel like my reputation is kind of as the biggest Garpax hater around. But defensively,
You?
I love a front court of Wendell, Thad, and Otto. I think that that could be much better defensively than what they've had in the past. And offensively, if they just play a little bit more up tempo, and if Boylan doesn't coach them like a total idiot, I think that they at least have enough pieces to be interesting. One thing that I do think is sort of going to affect this, though, is that I'm just throwing this out there for you, Matt. I think that there's a lot of teams this year primed to make trades, like a lot of sellers. Two that come to mind immediately for me, the Raptors. They got a bunch of dudes on one-year deals. I think Lowry's on a one-year deal now. Marcus Gasol's on a one-year deal. Then you also have a team like the Thunder. They have Gallo. That would be a premium trade chip for someone like, I don't know, Portland to acquire. Obviously, CP3 still got Steven Adams. Do you have any thoughts on just like, some of the bad teams potentially selling off pieces, maybe even Kevin Love? I feel like, if the Sixers get Kyle Lowry or if, Kevin Love makes a move that's impactful for a team that, this year in particular, at the beginning of it, seems like we could be set to see some trades.
First off, after you said that, my first thought was, oh, well, they're gonna trade Wendell Carter Jr. in January. Like that, like Ricky's just like begging them to trade Wendell Carter Jr. Like he has like a week where he averages 18 and 8, and then they're like, yep, gotta sell high on him. We think we could get real value for him on the market. I mean,
John Salmons
I
is
don't
available
know.
again, by the way.
I think it's tough to forecast what the trade market's going to be like. And the reason I say that is the next year's free agency class is so bad that teams are going to be really hesitant to do anything that honestly creates more space for them that they're going to have to fill. And that makes finding partners a little bit harder. The other thing I think is that you're right that Love's a good value on the market. You're right that Danilo Gallinari is a good value on the market. But I also think that so many teams had to change so much this summer that you almost have to give that, like, they have to give those teams time to try and figure out who they are. Like, I think it's going to be really hard to go into, to get to the deadline of when you can trade the guys that you signed this summer on December 15th when you get to that point and just and be like, oh, we're going to give up on this already. I think that that's going to be hard to find. And I don't know that there's that many teams that are really going to be like, we have to course correct. Now, Portland's an interesting one, right? Because Portland made all these moves this summer to kind of like, they got rid of Mo Harkless, they got rid of Al-Farouq Aminu, and then they added Hassan Whiteside for some reason. They're without Nurkic for a while. They're the kind of team that might be like, if they start off rough, if things are going south, they may be a team that's like, we can't afford to wait. We got to pull the trigger on something big. But I think generally speaking, I think there's going to be a hesitance to kind of abandon ship because you can't get anything better this summer, so the clearing space doesn't help you. And with the rest of it, I think it's like, if you're making a move, is Danilo Gallinari going to get you where you want to go? Or, you know, what are the teams that look at Danilo Gallinari and say, like, he's a guy that can put us over the hump? And so I think that's going to be one of the things because we just don't know enough about what the season's like or who's really good or who's going to be great. Most of the teams should be pretty close. And I think it's going to create a false sense of confidence with a lot of teams to maybe stick it out.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, just the season in general, just the wide open nature of it should be a lot of fun. Before we wrap it up here, FIBA World Cup is coming up. Team USA, not very impressive, at least roster-wise, and they lost the game to Australia over this last weekend. Patty Mills just went apeshit. Pop threatened to trade him. I think he had 30 points in that game. When I saw last, the Team USA, I think, was like minus 175 at Westgate. I know Serbia is really good. They have Jokic. They have a few other NBA players. Greece has Giannis. Spain's always really good. I mean, Australia beat USA. France has got a pretty loaded NBA roster. Real quick, do you think Team USA is going to win it, or do you think somebody else is going to upset them and take this gold this time?
I think that there's value on the upset. That's what I think. I think that there's value on the upset. When we look at the roster, like when you actually just read down the roster and you start to be like, oh boy, like this is just not a roster that inspires a lot of confidence. When you're like, boy, they really need Mason Plumlee to play well. You're like, ooh, I don't know about this. It's also really weird to me that the United States is not going to have the best player in the tournament. That's going to be Giannis Antetokounmpo. They're not going to have the second best player in the tournament. That's going to be Nikola Jokic. So they have like the third. Now they have like third through, 15th.
Actually, Rudy Gobert is the third best player in the tournament, so they don't have him either.
They don't have the third best player in the tournament. So, genuinely really kind of alarming what they're actually looking at, especially like Serbia is plus 200, Greece is plus 1,000. But then you do really – and then, like, you look at Australia, who's plus 3,000 and just beat them. And you're like, ooh, I don't know about this. There's still a really good chance that the United States wins. They still should be the favorite, I think. They do have, I think, enough talent to get it done. But – I do – the variance is the thing. Is that the United States has a bad day, they're going to lose. And if that happens at the wrong time, that could be – wind up being the difference. So, like, I don't know what happened with everybody. Like, De'Aaron Fox going home is the one that's just baffling to me. I just – why? Why is De'Aaron Fox not there? Like, why – you know, like, some of these guys – like, Kyle Kuzma – okay, I mean, it kind of makes sense. I mean, Kuzma, not great. But, like – Fox wowed everybody. Like, why? Why on earth is Fox not on this team? They just lost so much talent. But then I do realize that, like, look, there's a lot of guys on this roster I think are really good. I think Jason Tatum's really good. And so there's a capacity for them to do some big things just with their talent. It's going to take a combination of a team having a really hot day, playing with confidence, and the United States having a bad day. It's just the comfort's gone. It used to be like the United States could play like garbage. They still win by 20.
Right.
And that's just – that is not this team. But this team plays badly, they're going to lose by 15.
And they got all these Celtics, so even Americans are going to be, you know, somewhat happy when they lose. That's a fun subplot that we normally don't have.
Matt, thank you so much for joining us. Please just let our listeners know where we can find your work, follow you on Twitter.
Yeah, you can check me out at HP Basketball. If you don't like volume, you should check out at Matt Moore, TAN. I'm much quieter on there. You can find my work at the Action Network. You should download our app. It is the fastest app I have ever seen for tracking scores. Like, it's way. I've used ESPN, CBS Sports. I used to work there. It is the fastest app for tracking sports. I timed it with like the live game action, and it was something like 7 seconds from the time that an assist occurred until it popped up in my app. It's extremely fast. It's a great app for tracking scores.
Matt Moore, first ballot basketball Twitter Hall of Famer. So thank you so much for jumping on. We really appreciated it.
Going on my tombstone. Thanks, guys.
Take it easy. That'll be it all for us at Cash Considerations this week. As always, please go check out Blue Wire Network on Twitter at Blue Wire Pods. We've been doing a lot of fun stuff there. We're adding podcasts by the week as well. We're growing. Please go check us out. And then for us, Cash Considerations, please always rate and review us wherever you listen to your pods. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, all that fun stuff. We always like to hear our reviews. Please give us feedback on Twitter as well. Jason, Ricky, you know where to find us. We're always looking to get better and all that fun stuff. So again, thank you to Matt Moore for joining us, and we're done for this week. So from Jason and Ricky, some cash considerations. Take it easy, guys.